president who has done more to trample on the Constitution and civil liberties than any other president in modern history. This is really quite a show, I think.
So, Helen Zia, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Writer, author, feminist, Chinese-American, author of Asian American Dreams. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke. Aaron Maté, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm Habanero, and this is today's edition of Concert Billboard for Tuesday, August 12th. The Long Island Tuba Quartet is performing at the Bayshore Band Shell. Bob Dylan's in Prospect Park. The Broad Hollow Theater Company is presenting Frog and Toad Are Friends, and that's at the Harry Chapin Theater. Nacho Mama's Band is at Cedar Beach. For Wednesday, August 13th, the Twin Shores Chorus is at the Harry Chapin Theater. Ian Parker is performing at Morell's. And Nacho Mama's Band is at the Beach Hut at Venetian Shores. That's in Lindenhurst. On Thursday, August 14th, Full House. There, we've got a lot of stuff going on. Kenny Rogers is at the Capital One Theater. Mary Lamont is at the Mill House Inn. The Harry Chapin Theater is presenting Wondrous Stories. Barbecue has a great show coming up. The opening act is the Tommy Keys Band, followed by Watermelon Slim and the Workers. Gail Storm is performing at Prime View. And Nacho Mama's Band is at the Off-Key Tiki Bar. Thursday sounds like a good day, but Friday's even better. Buddy Miriam at Blue Midnight, the Long Island Philharmonic at Eisenhower Park, Mary Lamont at the Lido Beach Town Park, Jimmy Webb at the Harry Chapin Theater, Hat Trick at Otto's Sea Grill, the Tommy Keys Band at Tumbleweeds, Brother Peach at the Brick House Brewery, Gail Storm at the Dockside Cafe, and she's performing with Chanel Latimer. Albert Castilla's at the Turning Point. The Long Island Original Music Festival is at the Vale Levitt Theater. And that's it for today's Concert Billboard on WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock, and that means it's time for Off the Wall. Thank you. And a very good evening to everybody by the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this nice, pleasant day in August. Finally, the hot weather is gone. Finally, we have some nice cool weather, which is what you want in the middle of August. But regardless, nobody cares about that. Boy, it has hit the fan, hasn't it? You go away for just a few days, and all of a sudden, some new region of the world erupts. It's just, well, it's not funny, really, but it's interesting. It's fascinating. It tells you something about the state of the globe and how everything is just so, we're dancing on Tinders or something, whatever the phrase is. The slightest misstep, and all of a sudden you're facing down the barrel of World War III, or whatever the term is. It's more fun this time over in the ex-Soviet Republic of Georgia. And we'll be getting to that a little bit more in detail as the show progresses. We're going to have some special guests on in just a few minutes. But there are other things going on in the world as well. We thought we'd be talking about the Olympics. We thought that would be the big deal. And, of course, the upcoming political nonsense that'll be happening in St. Paul and Denver. Actually, you know, a lot's happened. A lot's happened this week. Well, let me first tell you a couple of things that happened to me, because that's more important, obviously, and also because it has more of an effect on me personally, and that affects the way I look at the rest of the world, and I just feel like talking about it first. I saw two things this week that I never saw before in my life. Two things. It's unusual to have two in one week, but yesterday I saw a golf ball-sized hail. Yeah, so a golf ball-sized hail. I was just minding my own business. All of a sudden, yeah, I knew it was raining. I heard the thunder, and I thought the roof was going to fall in. It was this pounding noise all of a sudden. I thought, this is it. This is how I'm going to go out. The whole building collapsing on top of me. But no, I looked outside, and there were just these white rocks, it looked like, just falling out of the sky. And I went out. First of all, I wanted to see what it was like to actually get clocked with one of these things, you know, because I have to know, can you really sustain some serious damage from hail of that size? And plus, there were people outside anyway, so naturally, it wasn't like I was taking a risk nobody else was going to be taking. And, you know, for some reason, it didn't hurt all that much. It just was sort of a slight sting. You'd think that something like a rock falling out of the heavens would really hurt. But for some reason, when it does strike you, it's just a bit of an inconvenience, not much more than that. So yeah, I grabbed the piece and marveled in its uniqueness that, hey, a piece of ice that just fell from the sky in the middle of summer. And I watched it melt, and it was rather poetic. And the other thing I saw this week, which is actually sort of on the other side of the scale of of beauty and pleasantness, I saw somebody actually get physically thrown out of a bar. Now, I've seen people get thrown out of things before, but I never saw anybody actually get grabbed by a collar and physically thrown out the door to land on their ass. Yeah, I actually saw that. I was at a dive bar. Dive bars are great. I don't know if people appreciate the concept of dive bars. Basically, they're these very cheap, very dingy type of drinking holes that tend to exist in Lower Manhattan. And I like to go there occasionally with friends just to sort of hang out, talk, meet people. You always do meet interesting people. You always do. And there's one in particular. I'm not going to give out names because, number one, I don't want to give free advertising. Number two, I don't want everybody in the world to show up at these places. But there's one in particular that I think David Lynch would love. You walk into the place and you expect to see the little dancing man on the checkered floor somewhere in the place. And if you go to the bathroom, you probably will see him. It's one of those amazing places. You always wind up talking to cool people. And in this particular case, somebody actually recognized me. You know you've arrived. You've arrived at success in the world when you can walk into a dive bar in Lower Manhattan and have somebody recognize you. This was somebody actually who recognized me from years ago here in Stony Brook. In fact, he had been inside my house at one point at some kind of social democrat meeting that happened to be taking place over at the Cedars. And wow, it was just, I couldn't believe somebody could actually recognize me after all these years. I suppose I retain the same unique look, I guess. I know I wouldn't be able to do that. And he could have just been making it all up because I didn't even remember anything. I just remembered vaguely that I lived in that place once. But yeah, there were these kids that just kept coming into the place. I guess they were over 21, but they were acting like 12-year-olds. Not that there's anything wrong with being 12. I'm just saying that you know, inside of a dive bar, you have to maintain a certain decorum. You have to not do certain things. And when the bartender tells you not to, no, it's not. Spiny is guessing which bar, but that's a very good one. In fact, some people went to that one afterwards, but that's not the one. Spiny knows his dive bars. No, it's not that one. I think you know which one it is, though. So they basically were asked not to drink on the street. Now, in England, you can do that. I don't know why, but in England, you can take your pint of whatever you get at your local pub and not only walk outside in the street with their glass, you can walk across the street with their glass and just sort of hang out and talk to other people, all of whom no doubt will be wearing suits and ties. I don't know why that happens either, but that's England for you. That's London. Here, though, in the States, or at least in New York, you don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. You'll get in trouble for doing that. The bar will get in trouble for doing that. So when they continued to do it, the bartender just said, "That's enough. You guys are done. Get out of here." They just would not accept that. They just kept walking back in over and over again. And the way this particular bar is set up, and if you do know dive bars, you'll know which one I'm talking about. Now, in order for the bartender to get to the front door, he has to walk all the way to the end of the bar to where the entrance is, go outside the entrance, then come walking all the way up the one lone hallway in the place. So that whole process can take a good 25 seconds unless he's charging at you or unless he hops over the bar, which he did not do. So in this particular case, he would do that, tell the people, "Okay, that's it, you're done," and then walk all the way back. And then by the time he had gotten all the way back to his position behind the bar, they were back inside and he had to go out again. He must have done this 3 or 4 different times. And so finally, when they just kept persisting and showing up again, I guess thinking that if they just kept repealing over and over again, that for some reason they'd be listened to, he just grabbed one of them from the collar, not in a rough way, just sort of grabbed them and moved them aside and just pushed him, and he just landed right on his ass on the sidewalk. And I imagine to somebody looking up the street, they would have just seen this guy come flying out the bar in this stereotypical fashion that you see in cartoons and just kind of land, like, I guess, an Andy Capp cartoon or something like that, or who knows. I've seen it so many times on television. And, you know, I don't think he had even hit the ground before I was commenting to the people around me, "You know, this is the first time in real life I have ever seen somebody get thrown out of a bar like that." And people were nodding and saying, "Yeah, you know, it doesn't happen all that often." And that's another cool thing about being in places like this. You start conversing with people like you've known them all your life, and before you know it, you've got a real problem on your hands. But this particular case, the message was conveyed, and they did not come back, although I don't think they were very happy. Nobody was hurt either. He got right back up again, tried to come in yet again, but I think eventually his friends convinced him, you know, this isn't worth it. Those are two things I saw this week, which were kind of cool. And yesterday, in the midst of the hailstorm, they issued a tornado warning, not a watch, a tornado warning. And I even have it here. I have the warning right in my hand. It's this webpage, which you can go to at any time. It's here at Stony Brook, stonybrook.edu/SB. I don't get that. Why do you need SB when you're already stonybrook.edu? You know, it's got to be, I guess maybe if they're talking about Southampton, maybe then it's SH or something. But then it shouldn't be stonybrook.edu then if they're talking about a different city. All right, I'm sorry. stonybrook.edu/SB/emergency/alerts.shtml. And then you see this this big SB alert thing, and notifications from the Stony Brook University Emergency Operations Center. Yeah, but you didn't know there was a Stony Brook University Emergency Operations Center. Well, there is. They've got a multi-line door label. And what it said was, "Tornado warning. The National Weather Service has issued a tornado warning for western Suffolk County in southeast New York." You can tell they just pasted this from someplace, because obviously if you're going to Stony Brook, you know where Suffolk County is. "Please seek shelter within a building location and stay away from all windows. We will update you with further information as it becomes available." And underneath this was actually kind of cool. "During a disaster or major emergency, all students, faculty, and staff are encouraged to monitor this website and other communications outlets for additional information that may become available. WUSB 90.1 FM, campus cable channel 8, and local media stations." It's good that we get number one billing there, as we should. But the thing about this, which was kind of weird, was that I turned on the TV right after seeing this. I mean, it's pretty serious. They're saying seek shelter. They're not saying keep an eye out. They're saying go right now and seek shelter within a building location. Kind of vague. I didn't know what to do. I've never been in a tornado warning before. I've never seen a tornado except on television. Just like the guy being thrown out of a bar. Never seen it in real life before. So here is a real life tornado warning. This could have been, this might have been the third thing I saw this week I never saw before. A tornado warning directed at me. I don't think that ever happened. So I turned on the television set. I'm expecting to see the emergency alert system, EAS, activated, and it's not. It's not activated at all anywhere. All the soap operas are on, all the game shows, all the women's talk shows, the usual nonsense that's on in the afternoon on local television. I tuned to the local cable channel, News Channel 12, and they had a little scroll that wasn't even there when I turned it on. It was about 5 minutes after I had seen this on the website. And I the only reason I saw this on the website was because we were alerted to it on the WUSB mailing list. And after 5 minutes, a little scroll came on saying that, yes, there's a tornado, I don't know if they even said warning, they might have said watch, in effect for Suffolk County until 1:30 p.m. It was 1:35 p.m. And they kept that scroll going all the way up until 2 o'clock. And then at 2 o'clock, actually at 2:05, they said it's in effect until 2 o'clock. I don't understand how these warnings work. They're only in effect in the past, apparently. Meanwhile, there was nobody saying anything about what we should do next. I kept clicking on this webpage. Nothing changed until it went away a few hours later, and then there were no alerts. So I got to tell you, folks, if there ever is a tornado hitting this place, I don't think we're very well prepared for it. I don't think Long Island in general knows what to do. I mean, we can put up a web page and we can have little scrolls in the bottom of screens. But apart from that, not really much in the way of letting people know what's happening. There were no sirens, no alerts, no information being passed around. I went to all kinds of news websites. Nobody was saying that tornadoes are coming or that we should do a particular thing or not do a particular thing. Yet the warning was issued. It was definitely issued. So, sobering bit of news there. And there was no tornado either. That's the final insult to all that. But there was hail. Okay, a couple of quick things involving... Let's just look at the Olympics very quickly, because it's fun. It's always fun to see what goes on in places like that, where the whole world is watching every little movement. And, a bit's going on. If you saw the opening ceremonies... This, according to an Australian newspaper, turns out that Bill Gates was not the only famous Microsoft identity to be spotted at the Olympic opening ceremony. Numerous bloggers also observed the cameo played by the so-called blue screen of death. That's right, the Windows error screen that flashes up on your computer signifying that it's time to reboot. The screen was projected onto the roof of the National Stadium during the grand finale to the four-hour spectacular, as veteran Chinese gymnast Li Ning, suspended 70 meters above the stadium floor, jogged, in quotes, towards the Olympic torch. The blue screen of death message begins with the following sentence. A problem has been detected and Windows has been shut down to prevent damage to your computer. Except this was being shown to millions of people all around the world. Now, usually the only way to remove the blue screen of death is to restart your computer, pressing Control-Alt-Delete at the same time. Images of the malfunction have popped up on Chinese forum sites showing the clearly visible error message projection. The ceremony, which featured 14,000 performers depicting 5,000 years of Chinese history, also involved the use of advanced technology to control the sound, lights, and projectors. At various times during the event, images of whales, clouds, and the faces of young children were superimposed on the roof of the stadium, also known as the bird's nest. And as Li Ning completed a lap of the stadium roof's rim, images of the torch relay were flashed up. The spectacular opening ceremony also included 35,000 fireworks launched from 1,800 sites around the city to form patterns in the air. It was revealed yesterday that organizers digitally inserted computer-enhanced images of some of the fireworks displays. I'll get to that in a second. But the blue screen of death is a bit of an inside joke among geeks, and it's often used to poke fun at Microsoft's bug-prone Windows operating system. Now, Gates, who stepped down from his last official full-time position at Microsoft at the end of June, remains as the software company's part-time non-executive chairman. He's been spotted at several Olympic events, accompanied by his wife, and is here in a private capacity. Here, of course, meaning there. Sorry, I'm reading it in the perspective of somebody who obviously is in Beijing. Microsoft is designated as an official supplier to the 2008 Olympic Games. And basically, we all know this. But they decided not to run the more advanced operating system of Vista, which may be a good thing for them. Continuing, though, to the story about the fireworks, it wasn't what it seemed. If you were watching television, and I can't believe that this actually happened, but, you know, when you look at who's in charge, when you look at people running a country like China and trying to change history, change facts, change the way people think, of course, inserting fake footage is not something that would be that unusual. Beijing organizers confirmed on Tuesday over there, which probably was Monday over here, that some of the fireworks display featured pre-recorded footage. Fireworks that burst into the shape of 29 gigantic footprints were shown trudging above the Beijing skyline to the National Stadium near the start of the ceremony. Though the footprint-shaped fireworks were real, some of the footage shown to television viewers around the world and on giant screens inside the Bird's Nest Stadium featured a computer-generated three-dimensional image. It was confirmed that previously recorded footage was provided to the broadcasters for convenience and theatrical effects, as in many other big events, said Beijing Organizing Committee spokesman Wang Wei. Or was that Wei? Wang Wei. Yeah, okay. On the day of the ceremony, there were actual footprints of fireworks from the south to the north of the city. However, because of the poor visibility of the night, some previously recorded footage may have been used. The computerized images were produced by Crystal Digital Technology of Beijing. We did our best to create a rendering that would look like the rest of the shot was taken live, said company spokesman Li Ming. Most people could not tell the difference. NBC said broadcasters Bob Costas and Matt Lauer told viewers the display was cinematic. This is actually almost animation, Lauer said on the air. What does that mean? It was actually almost animation. Are they saying that it's fake, or are they saying that it looks like it's fake? Well, anyway, 1 billion people watched, and I didn't watch. Because when 1 billion people do something, I tend to do something else. And, it's interesting. Could you tell it was animated? That it was fake? It's pretty unbelievable that they would actually provide live television coverage an event and then substitute a different event or a non-event because it wasn't deemed good enough. Kind of similar to something else they did in Beijing. A 7-year-old Chinese girl was not good-looking enough for the Olympics opening ceremony, so another little girl with a pixie smile lip-synced Ode to the Motherland. That's according to a ceremony official. Well, you know, at least they're admitting it. At least they're speaking about it. Are they admitting it because somebody else catches them in the act? Is that the reason they're admitting it? A member of China's ruling Politburo asked for the last-minute change to match one girl's face with another's voice. The audience will understand that it's in the national interest, the ceremony's chief music director said in an interview. The news follows reports that footage of fireworks were also fake. Now, China has been eager to present the flawless Olympics image to the world, shooing migrant workers and so-called petitioners who come to the central government with grievances from the city and shutting down any sign of protest. The country's quest for perfection apparently includes its children. Lin Miaoki's performance Friday night, like the ceremony itself, was an immediate hit. The 9-year-old became an instant star with a patriotic song, according to reports in the Chinese newspapers. But the real voice behind the tiny pigtail girl in the red dress who wowed 91,000 spectators at the National Stadium on opening night really belonged to 7-year-old Yang Paiyi. Her looks apparently failed the cuteness test with officials organizing the ceremony, but Chen said her voice was judged the most beautiful. The national interest requires that the girls should have good looks and a good grasp of the song and look good on screen. Lin Miaoki was the best in this. No, wait a minute. How could she have been the best in that if they had to substitute somebody else for her? Obviously, she wasn't the best. Somebody else was the best, but she didn't have the best looks. Wow, you know, teach them young. Teach them the values young of fakeness, of focusing on looks and focusing on the various... I guess, getting away from the imperfections, whatever imperfections that people can't handle and can't help. Anyway, during a live rehearsal soon before the ceremony, the Politburo members said Miyoki's voice must change, and Pei's voice was matched with Miyoki's face. We had to make that choice. It was fair for both of them. We combined the perfect voice and the perfect performance. Well, it's a bit of a scandal now. And actually, people in China are reacting to this. And the fact that they're speaking out against it. The organizers really messed up on this one, said Liu Xiaoyang, a retail worker in Beijing. This is like a voiceover for a cartoon character. Why couldn't they pick a kid who was both cute and a good singer? This damages the reputation of both kids for their future, especially the one lip-syncing. Now everyone knows she's a fraud. Who cares if she's cute? Zhang Yinji, who works in marketing in Beijing, disagreed. I can understand why they picked the prettier girl. They need to maintain a certain aesthetic beauty during the opening ceremonies. The situation is not so bad, especially since it gives two people an opportunity to shine rather than just one. And so it goes. The Olympics continue with all kinds of finger-pointing accusations and hysterics. And throughout it all, of course, there are protests continuing. And attention is drawn to all sorts of other inequities and unfairness. But attention was kind of robbed because what was going on the exact same day, almost to the moment, in a different part of the world. And that's where war broke out between two regions that used to be part of the same country, Georgia and Russia. It's pretty unbelievable, some of the things going on there. And these are regions of the world that lots of people had never even heard of before. And there's a theory actually about things like this. It comes from a book called The Lexus and the Olive Tree by Thomas Friedman. He proposed the Golden Arches theory of conflict prevention. And this comes from the Democratic Underground. He observed that no two countries with a McDonald's franchise had ever gone to war with one another. It's a version of the democratic peace theory. Now, shortly after the book was published, the NATO bombing of Serbia proved that theory wrong, though in a later edition, Friedman argued that this exception proved the rule. The war ended quickly, he argued, partly because the Serbian population did not want to lose their place in a global system symbolized by McDonald's. It should be noted that Friedman framed this theory in terms of McDonald's Golden Arches with tongue slightly in cheek. Recently, Friedman has updated the theory with the Dell theory of conflict prevention. In 2006, McDonald's hosting nations Israel and Lebanon were involved in a war, which could also be considered evidence against the Golden Arches theory. But at least now you know that there is a Golden Arches theory. And yes, there is a McDonald's in Georgia. We were actually contemplating calling it. But, you know, I realize now it's 2 a.m, and as if the people in Tbilisi don't have enough to worry about, you know, being bombed by Russian fighters and things like that. I don't want to make their phones ring and have them be even more upset at various things. But what I am going to do, I'm going to make somebody else's phone ring. If I can get a dial tone here. We're going to call the wrong number is what we're going to do. Let's call the right number this time. Sorry about that. Area codes, you know. Okay, we're going to call some folks that we know over in Amsterdam, which is not in Georgia. It's in the Netherlands. But we're talking to people who have... actually, that's the phone ringing.
You got a right number now.
wow, you're listening to me live, huh?
Yes, I was.
I guess the streaming's doing pretty good if you don't have any delay at all. That's the voice, of course, of Hanukkah. Hanukkah has been on our radio program before. And welcome to the radio. Are you being joined by Sasha as well tonight?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
He's around.
Well, okay, if he wants to barge in at any point, he's welcome to. And Hanukkah, the reason that we're bothering you at midnight, actually it's 12:30 your time in Amsterdam, is because you actually visited the country of Georgia, which is front page in all the newspapers. Is that right?
Yeah. I've been there several times, in 2004 as a tourist, and 3 times in 2006 as a tour leader.
So you started as a tourist and you became a tour leader, so you must know quite a bit about the country.
Well, a bit. It's a complicated region. And, like, I don't know the history like from prehistoric times up till now, but I do know a little bit about the political situation of the past few years.
Well, have you ever been to South Ossetia, where all the mayhem is taking place? Never been there.
No. South Ossetia has never been a tourist destination like since the collapse of the Soviet Empire.
Okay, and forgive me if I'm pronouncing any of these wrong, because it's new to us here in America, but Abkhazia, the other region, ever been there?
No, same thing. Abkhazia was a major holiday destination during the Soviet Union. It seems to be the most beautiful region of Georgia, but, since 1991, they have been wanting to become autonomous and split away from Georgia, and it's absolutely not advisable to go there. The border from Georgia to Abkhazia is closed. You're not going to go through.
Oh, it's a closed border. So who actually runs the border then?
It's a good question. I'm not quite sure, but I think if you come from the Georgian side, people from Abkhazia, like the local Abkhazian government, is not going to let you in. If you come from the Russian side, you should be able to go in and visit Abkhazia, but not from the Georgian side.
So even though it's part of Georgia, the people there won't let Georgians in, but they will let Russians in, who are technically part of a different country.
Most people in Abkhazia think that Abkhazia is not a part of Georgia, mm-hmm. and the Georgians think it is a part of Georgia, so opinions differ on that point.
So about the closest we can get to that over here is Fisher's Island, which is technically part of Long Island, but it's got a Connecticut zip code, and the only way to get there is from Connecticut. You have to take a boat to Connecticut, and then from there you have to take a boat to Fisher's Island. It's got a Long Island phone number. It's in the 631 area code, but it's really closer to Connecticut. Now, it hasn't gotten to the stage where people are taking up arms or preventing people from Long Island from going there. But I wonder, with all this fierce nationalism going on, who knows what could be down the pike. But now, in all seriousness, though, you spent a lot of time in Georgia. You've obviously met people who live there. What's your take on this whole situation?
Well, that is a very difficult question. It's all a bit vague. It seems like Georgia started this a week ago. And, Georgian and Russian troops have been there for the past 10, 15 years as peacekeeping troops, so they have been there for a long time. And I think on August the 8th, the first thing I heard was that Saakashvili said, okay, we are going to offer ceasefire, because there have been some shootings going off and on for years. He said, okay, we're going to have a ceasefire, and then within a day, they just went all in. That was a very weird thing, and it's kind of hard to really understand what's going on from the things that you hear in the press, because they're contradictory.
Well, one of the things I did hear was that the Georgians were responding to shelling that was coming from somewhere in South Ossetia. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Possibly. It's really hard to tell. I think no one really knows what happened and what triggered this. Hmm. There are several theories, of course. And one of the theories is that Georgia, they really want to become part of NATO, and that they want to control the unruly regions. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to become a part of NATO. And the other theory is, of course, that Russia has always been meddling in Georgian affairs, and that they thought it was a good opportunity now to really get those regions to become a part of Russia. But truth is very hard to... It's impossible to know what's really going on.
Well, of course, the first casualty of war is the truth. We all know this. Watching some of the media... I'm lucky. I get a television station called Russia Today, and it's an English-language news channel. That comes from Moscow. And I got to say, I've been watching this since this whole skirmish began, and what they're reporting, what I'm actually seeing, are so radically different. For instance, They were showing the United Nations hearings on the conflict and how people were coming up and speaking, person after person, saying that we want Russia to stop with the bombing. We want them to do this. And the headline underneath said, Russia and the world stand against Georgia. And that's not what was happening at all. If you just listen to what was being said, both sides were being condemned for using force of various sorts. But certainly the world was not standing behind Russia. They were being roundly criticized for this. And then I saw these other pieces where they just said that genocide, ethnic cleansing, they were using all these catchphrases. And this was before the conflict was even 24 hours old. They were making all these claims. And in very, very big letters that took up the bottom third of the screen, it simply said, war is on. As if it was this was something that they were really waiting for and they were very almost eager to jump into. It's kind of like Fox News for Russia, I thought, except it was in English. You can go to RussiaToday.com, see for yourself some of the stories that are being reported there. Among them, just some of the headlines here, Georgian troops fire at refugees. They say authorities in South Ossetia say Georgian troops have shelled the road being used for evacuating people from the conflict zone, according to Interfax. Attacks are continuing in the region despite claims from Georgia that it was imposing a ceasefire. CNN was blamed for using misleading war video, and this could very well be true because we all know CNN does that sometimes. American broadcaster CNN has been accused of using the wrong pictures in their coverage of the conflict. A Russian cameraman says footage of wrecked tanks and ruined buildings, which was purported to have been filmed in the town of Gori, in fact showed the South Ossetian capital. Hanukkah, how do you say it?
Tskhinvali.
Thank you. I just can't do it.
Well, the point is, if the footage is from Tskhinvali, then it's probably the Georgian tanks firing. If the footage is reported to be from Gori, then they were supposedly the Russians bombing the town. So that's why they were accused of misleading the public by saying it's wrong, the other town.
Right. Now, doesn't it strike you, though, as an incredibly swift reaction on the part of the Russians to this this incursion into South Ossetia? The fact that shortly after that, they also went into the other region on the other side of the country, and not only that, went beyond those regions into Georgia itself, started bombing things near Tbilisi. That, to me... I've grown up with bullies all my life, but it just sort of seems like the tactic, you know, when you finally push the bully back and he goes running to the teacher and gets you in trouble, it just seems sort of like that's it's kind of an amazing reaction. You're using a shotgun to kill a mosquito, you know?
Mm-hmm. Point one, the Russians have always been there in both South Ossetia and Abkhazia. So it was very easy for them to strike back, so far about the swiftness of the response. And second, yes, Georgia is a very small country, and I've always thought that for such a small country, they had far too big a mouth to the big neighbor. Georgia has been seeking connection to the U.S., and they've gotten a lot of backing of the U.S. They get a lot of money for the military. The U.S. Army has been training the Georgian Army, and because of that, Georgia has troops in Iraq. But if you are really in trouble, then the U.S. is very far away, and Russia is a really big country and the next-door neighbor. So Georgia is not very smart having such a big mouth against a big neighbor.
Yeah, I think that's definitely some truth to that. I assume they thought the United States would come running in, which would be about the dumbest thing the U.S. could ever do. I mean, imagine this was part of the Soviet Union, and now people are actually saying that, yes, the United States should get involved inside the former Soviet Union against Russia, the former biggest part of the Soviet Union. I mean, that just is not done. You don't do things like that. What's next? Tibet? Would you run into there and face off against the Chinese? There are just certain things that are not wise.
That is obviously one of the reasons that Russia is not so happy with the U.S., being friends with Georgia.
Oh, it's one thing to be friends.
Like their backyard.
Right. But it's one thing to be friends with somebody, but it's another thing to have undue influence, especially in touchy situations like this. And yes, I imagine there's a lot to gain for Georgia by having a nice big friend like the U.S., but also there's an awful lot to lose by not, as you say, being smart about how loudly they talk and how much they upset the people next door who have a lot more power than they do. That said, though, I do have to feel for the Georgian people who, for the first time in many, many years, have felt a certain sense of independence from the Russians and have had a democratically elected government. I remember when Shevardnadze was kicked out. Remember this a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
They had their it wasn't the Orange Revolution. That was Ukraine.
It was the Rose Revolution.
The Rose Revolution, that was it. Yeah. And everyone expected once they toppled this guy that he'd be imprisoned or maybe worse. And instead they said, look, we just want you not to be in power. Live in peace in your house or whatever. We'll leave you alone, but just let us run the country now because it's time for a change.
Yeah.
And that struck me. That struck me as like, well, this is one of the nicest transitions of power that that was not entirely agreed to that I'd seen in a while. And it just, I don't know. It's I can't say the name of the president either yet. But his name is what?
His name is Mikhail Saakashvili.
Okay, I'll work on it. Within a week, I'll have it.
Yeah.
I got Ahmadinejad. You know, I can say that now. But it's tough. It's tough for us Americans.
That's also a tough one. Yeah.
That's a tough one. I sat down for a full day and just said it over and over again. And now, unfortunately, the side effect of that is whenever somebody sneezes, I say Ahmadinejad, and I can't keep myself from doing that. And it's yeah, it's one of those things. But
when Saakashvili was elected in, I think it was January 2004, he was elected by a landslide. He was so incredibly popular, and people thought, oh, this guy is really going to save our country. And he promised to get rid of corruption and economical reforms and stuff like that. And everybody was really, really happy about it. I was there the first time in October 2004, and he was still very, very popular. His wife is from Holland. So when people ask me, where are you from? I say, Holland. They say, oh, Sandra, which is her first name. And so everybody loved Holland because the president's wife was from there. Now, in 2006, he was a lot less popular. And some people said, well, no, he shouldn't be the president, but maybe his wife, she's better. But also a lot of people were not so fond of her anymore.
Well, this sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think one reason for that is because maybe they expected too much from one guy to happen too quickly. And on the other hand, he was accused of, sitting on the plush and being part of the establishment and being corrupt himself. I don't know what's true of that, but his popularity was really way down. And I was kind of surprised that he got elected for a second term. Within Georgia, there were a lot of people who said that the elections were rigged. But I don't think there was any official proof of that.
What was the percentage that he won the second time?
I'm not sure. I don't remember so well, but it was still a majority, although not such a large one as the first time.
Uh-huh. So it definitely went down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Well, it's interesting to look at this whole region and see how things have changed over the years. But I have to wonder, this is something that we're just not that familiar with here in this particular part of the world. You have these regions of the country that declare themselves independent and that are made up mostly of people from a neighboring country. What possible advantage is there to wanting to hold on to those regions in the first place?
Sorry, the advantages for Georgia?
Yeah, the advantages for Georgia just holding on to a region that doesn't want to be part of them in the first place.
I think it's more of a principle matter. Most Georgians think that those two parts really belong to Georgia, and they think it's mostly inspired by Russia that those regions want to break away, and they really don't like Russia for meddling in Georgian affairs.
Mm-hmm.
There are also Georgians living in those regions,
uh-huh.
Although these days not so many as there used to be. During the Civil War of 1991-92 with Abkhazia, there were so many Georgians who fled from Abkhazia to the rest of the country. So those regions, they were really mixed. They were not only consisting of different people.
Mm-hmm. But these days, I've heard reports of up to 95% Russian to 5% Georgian in those two regions.
I heard about one-third of Georgians in Ossetia. I'm not sure.
Okay. I'm not sure where it's going to go from here. If I don't know how regions like that can be independent, so such tiny regions. In a way, this sort of reminds me of Kosovo, which recently declared independence. And of course, the Russians didn't like that at all. They thought Serbia should hold on to Kosovo. And in a way, I have to wonder, is this tit for tat? Are they saying that, well, because everybody's recognizing Kosovo, then you have to recognize South Ossetia and the other region whose name I forget.
Well, Abkhazia.
Abkhazia,
well, the Russians definitely say, look, Western world, you were all so eager to recognize Kosovo, and we said it's not a good idea, and now you're doing the exact opposite with Ossetia and Abkhazia.
Yeah, that's what I see. I see that in there.
They do have a valid point.
Mm-hmm. That I think is a valid point. That I think is something that should be looked upon. I don't really buy into this whole notion of, well, something existed hundreds of years ago and therefore it has to remain the way it was. Certainly, if a huge majority of people in a particular place want a change, if Texas wanted to secede, not that I'm hoping for that, but I'm just saying if they did, if they said that they voted in a certain way, I don't think we should force them to not join Mexico.
Yes, why not let them go?
Exactly. But you have that situation, you have all these parallels going on, and then something like this happens, and it just happens so quickly and so dramatically, and I think the rest of the world just didn't know how to respond.
Well, here in Europe, people respond mostly like, the big bad Russia is attacking Georgia. And most people don't really know anything about the region. And, well, they think the Russians, they were our enemies during the Cold War, so they're still kind of the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the big country, and Georgia is a small country, so it's probably Russia who are the bad guys.
Well, you also look at things like Vladimir Putin, all right, who now is no longer the president. He's the prime minister, except we all know he's really in charge. He's the guy who went, who left the Olympics and went over there immediately and seems to be calling the shots.
Yeah, referring to him as President Putin.
Who's referring to him as that?
I'm not sure. Some papers here and there, just forgetting he has a different job now.
Yeah, and he, of course, is somebody who's a relic of Cold War days. And I think he has some very bitter feelings towards the West. I'm not saying for unjustified reasons, but if you look at all that and you look at Russia's past, they have been expansionist in the past. It's one thing you can say about China. They're not expansionist. They oppress people within their borders, but they don't generally go around invading other countries, whereas Russia, you have the entire Eastern Bloc, you've got Afghanistan, and you could see it happening again.
In China, there is such a thing as a Tibet issue.
Yeah, well, that's, of course, if you assume that Tibet is not part of China to start with. But you don't see China landing troops in faraway places or...
Okay, let's not talk about China in the when we're talking about Georgia.
Well, you know, it's all kind
might
of
complicated matter.
Yeah, it's all sort of interrelated, but yes, let's instead talk about Iraq. And how Iraq has made it so the United States really has no moral standing whatsoever in this conflict. Does that seem clear to you?
Sorry?
Well, the fact that the United States has invaded a sovereign country and has taken them over doesn't really give us a whole lot to stand on when lecturing another country about doing something like that, if they have even done something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, today I read a column on the website Russia Today by somebody who made a comparison between the American invasion of Iraq to the Georgian invasion of Ossetia.
Uh-huh. And what did they conclude?
Well, he said it hasn't brought America much good, so why didn't Georgia learn from that?
Uh-huh. It's something I have to wonder what they were thinking, because obviously if the United States did get involved in the events over there, it's a stepping stone to world catastrophe. There's no question about that. And even the Bush administration, I don't think, is that dumb to go down that road.
Now, Georgia is kind of strategic. It has a nice position. It's bordering to Turkey. There's a oil pipeline running through Georgia. The oil comes from Baku in Azerbaijan and is going through Georgia to Turkey. And it's one of the sources that Europe can get oil from. That's not in Russia. So for Russia, it's also interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So any predictions as to what might happen next at this point? There's supposedly a ceasefire is in place, although each side is accusing the other of violating it or not respecting it in the first place. But supposedly, from what I hear, they're going to everyone's going to move back to where they were before all this started, except that there aren't going to be any more Georgian peacekeepers in either Abazia or Assedia.
Yeah. I hope it will end soon, and then it's probably going to go back to the status quo. I don't see a real solution in the near future, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think Russia is going to have any more of an interest in taking over parts of Georgia that are not these two regions?
I don't think so. I think that would be not wise for Russia to do. They would get a lot of... a lot of other countries would get angry with mm-hmm. them, but they have been making claims to these two parts in which the people actually do want to belong to Russia. So I think just these two parts, not other parts of Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I see their foreign minister saying that the Georgian president should resign or be thrown from power or something like that. And that that leads to worry that they're taking an undue interest in the affairs of another nation and might seek to carry those concerns out somehow.
Possibly, but I don't really see that happening in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are your personal plans? Are you going to continue leading tours to Georgia?
Well, at the moment, not many Dutch tour operators do have tours to Georgia because... due to lack of interest. It's actually a beautiful country, and everybody who goes there is really enthusiastic about it. Very nice people, beautiful landscapes, lots of old culture, great food.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not very well known. And, well, with the current situation, for this year it's not going to be anything. No one's going to go there.
Well, I remember you showed me all sorts of pictures of Georgia. Their written language is completely unique looking.
Yes.
I imagine their spoken language is as well.
Yes, they have their own language spoken by, there's only 4.6 million people in that country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very small language, and they have a beautiful alphabet, which is unique for Georgian.
Uh-huh. Do you have any words in Georgian?
Yes, I can say it. Would you like to hear a few?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Gamarjoba, that's hello. Sakartvelo, that is the Georgian name for Georgia. Tsisatkhela is rainbow. And then there are some of my favorite Georgian dishes, like khachapuri, balrijani, khenkali, and, of course, the famous mineral water, Borjomi.
Amazing. Now, as far as what this language is related to, is it derived from Russian in any way or completely unrelated?
No, it's absolutely not related to Russian. It's not really related to anything. It is part of, like, a group they call the Caucasus languages. There's a lot of small separate languages in that region, because people were separated by high mountains, so the languages developed separately.
And Ossetia, they have their own language there as well.
Yes, it's called Ossetian, and it seems to be related to Farsi, Persian.
That's simply incredible. And how many people live in that region, the breakaway republic?
That is a good question. I'm not quite sure.
Much less than in Georgia, though, which is only a few million.
Less.
So it's simply mind-boggling to me, and I imagine to many of our listeners, that so many of these regions exist where there are unique languages and cultures, and some of them want to be separated and some of them don't want to be separated. Can you think of any other regions we might be hearing from, either in Russia or some other ex-Soviet republic, or maybe even in your native country of Holland, places that want to break away?
Well, we have the northwestern part of the country called Friesland. They do have their own language, but as far as I know, not any plans for breaking away real soon.
We don't have anything here in the States. And in fact, you know, if we had different languages for every state, then there might be hope that, that we break away and do all kinds of fun things like that. But no, we all speak the same basic Midwestern twang.
Well, I think that's very practical. If you travel around in the U.S., you can speak English everywhere, Spanish in some parts, but it's very practical.
Yeah, it's also kind of scary when somebody blindfolds you and drops you in a random city and you have to guess where you are and it takes you 25 minutes.
Well, if you if you get in your car in Holland and you drive for 2 hours, you're either in Belgium, or if you go a little bit further in France, in Germany.
Or in the North Sea.
Yes, well, that doesn't drive so well.
No, don't drive in that direction. As far as, let's compare things. Holland and Georgia, which is bigger?
Georgia is about twice as big as Holland, and Georgia itself is, I think, a little bit smaller than South Carolina.
Wow. All right, that puts it all in perspective. Hanukkah, we're out of time, but you provided a fascinating insight into the people of Georgia and the language and the customs and the history. And it's good to know that you're out there still exploring. And, of course, people might remember we took the Trans-Siberian Express together, and you went to North Korea before I did. So we're seeing different parts of the world. I have no doubt that I'll see Georgia and that you'll be showing it to me someday.
Oh, yes, I would love to. As soon as the fighting is over, mm-hmm. Why don't we go there?
Is there a website you want to direct people to for more information on that?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Well, sorry.
If there's any special deals going on with visiting Georgia, I'd like to know about them as well, because it might be interesting.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for speaking to us tonight, and hope to see you again soon.
Okay, thank you.
Right, take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. That's Hanukkah speaking to us from Amsterdam about events in Georgia, which are ongoing. And no doubt we'll be talking about them in the future. OTW@2600.com. That's our email address. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
Too bad, bad, bad. What you get? It's kids. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It is 7 p.m.